conversation similarly, because Kirti is eternal. Om Aginatimanandasya Jana Jana Samataya Taksu Samilatayande Tasmai Sri Devadeva Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sapitam Jena Vitale Ayam Ukotadamayam Vedati Sarsadanta Manasa Kapatibhyascha Kripasindhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubhubh Lily Tibet Dao. Hong Kong. I'd like to introduce all the devotees to Madhuri. Madhuri has come all the way from Hong Kong. Gopinath has invited her and given her a visa. We're reading pastime, a very, very special pastime, where Krishna's power is tested by the most intelligent person in this universe, and his name is Brahma. Brahma literally means the greatest. So the greatest wants to test the greater than the greatest to find out how great that greatest is, how great Krishna is. And we've come to the point of the pastime where Brahma has stolen the boys and stolen the calves, and then come back 1 year later, or a moment after a moment of his time. And he sees that the boys and the calves are there, just as they were before he stole them away. And he became so bewildered, because he knew he had taken them, and yet they were there. So he was wondering if these were the original boys, because Krishna had expanded himself into calves and boys who had the exact properties that the original calves and boys, but they were Krishna actually. They were expanded from Krishna. And Brahma could not understand. There were such exact duplicates, replicas, that Brahma could not understand if these were the original ones who had somehow come back, or these were some created by some maya or mystic power of someone. And he could not understand. So as he stood bewildered, looking at the calves and the boys, Krishna decided to show him some of his power. And he and those calves and boys, who were actually Krishna, they began to manifest their forearm forms as Vishnu. And each of those forearm forms, each of those Vishnu forms of the Lord, they had the complete potency, practically speaking, of the whole. So unlimited, complete, infinite Vishnus or Lords had manifest from the one Lord. And they were all equal to him, and they all had unlimited potency. So Lord Brahma began to see this, and he began to see how the calves and boys were actually Vishnu, forearm forms, creating universes, and were being worshipped by every living entity. And all the potencies, all the powers that exist, that control us, the living entities, they were all worshipping the Supreme Lord. And he was covered from head to toe with tulsi leaves, because tulsi is so pleasing to Krishna. Why is tulsi so pleasing to Krishna? This is acknowledged by all the residents of the spiritual world. This is described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, when the four Kumaras go to Vaikuntha. They saw that tulsi, it was mentioned by Sukadeva Goswami, that the tulsi, there are so many different plants, so fragrant, so beautiful, but of all the different plants, tulsi is the most pleasing to Krishna. Why? And amazingly enough, the nature of Vaikuntha was that Tulsi was the most pleasing to Krishna, and no one was envious of Tulsi. Everyone acknowledged it. Now, that is very different from the material world, where if someone is superior, everyone tries to find fault in that person. So two questions. Why is there no envy in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world? And why is Tulsi so pleasing to Krishna? If I would say what's in my mind of the answers, you say, oh, I already know that. What's the answer? Why is Tulsi most pleasing? Everyone is so shy now. Why is Tulsi most pleasing? I'm not going to say it, but you're going to say it. Someone will say it. Why is Tulsi most pleasing? What is pleasing to Krishna?
Devotees.
And why are devotees pleasing to Krishna? Because they have devotion, love. They have bhakti. So Tulsi has so much bhakti for Krishna. That is the nature of Tulsi Devi. She is not of this world. She is, because what do they call her? They gave her a Latin name called, what is she called? Something religious, religio, something like that. Basil religio. Yes? Yeah, something like that.
Religious
Bethel. Yeah, but I mean, it's a nice name, but Tulsi is so much a nicer name. Tulasi Devi, because she has so much bhakti. She is not of this world. She can't be given a Latin name, actually. Her actual name is Tulsi. Tulasi Devi, or Bhakti Devi, or Vrinda Devi. These are names from the spiritual realm. So why did she have more devotion? Because that is her very nature. She's a Shakti. She's an energy of Krishna. Bhakti Devi. Vrindai Tulsi Devi. She's Bhakti Devi. So why is Bhakti have more devotion? Because Bhakti is devotion. That's what Bhakti is composed of. So that's the answer to the first question. But you already knew that. And she is Bhakti Devi. She is, and it is devotion that pleases Krishna. And then the other question is, why in the spiritual world was no one envious of Tulsi, even though she is in the supreme position? Like in the government here, in the British parliamentary systems, Australia, I don't know if India has it exactly the same, but they have in England they have it, there's the government and they have the shadow government. Yes? Do they have that here? Did they have that in India? I think it's not that organized. Too many shadows. And whatever, and the shadow government's job is whatever the government says, the shadow government says exactly the opposite and criticizes it. Because they're in power. India, everyone does that. There's 1.3 billion people, the shadow governments. Yes or no? A little bit like that. So, Tulsi, no one is envious of Tulsi because, why?
They have bhakti.
Because they have bhakti, yes, more.
But there's more bhakti than them.
But why aren't they envious?
Because you're pleasing to Krishna.
Yeah, so, okay. So, what is the very nature of the spiritual world is that Krishna is the center. This is what Sukadeva Goswami describes. And everyone in the spiritual world is interested in pleasing Krishna more than they're interested in pleasing themselves. And in the material world, everyone is only interested in pleasing themselves. It is the land of fish. Selfish. Not cell phones, but selfish. Selfish. Gondomwa, how do you say selfish?
Tsi.
It's the land of
Tsi.
No. Again.
Tsi.
Tsi. Again, one more time.
Tsi.
Okay, everyone repeat after me. No, we don't want to become selfish. Tsi. It is selfish. This is the land of selfishness, which means the land of envy. Because we think we are the center. This is the nature of false ego. This is the nature of Maya. Everyone conceives of themselves as the center. And in the spiritual world, everyone accepts that Krishna is the center. That's the essential difference. But not out of force, but out of love. Everyone in the spiritual world loves Krishna and they are happy with his pleasure. When he is pleased, they are pleased. So therefore there is no envy. If Tulsi gives more pleasure to Krishna, they'll water Tulsi so that she grows, so that she can give pleasure to Krishna. Everything is for Krishna's pleasure. There is no selfishness. Swartha. Sanskrit. In Hindi it's the same. Selfishness. So, when Brahma saw all the different, that these Vishu forms that had come from this little boy Krishna were being worshipped by every living entity, it specifically says by every living entity, then he saw their power, and he saw that he could not understand their greatness. He was overwhelmed. So now that we're hearing, he said, even, what is this? What is this that's so powerful? So Krishna took away Brahma's ability to see his potency, his power, because he was getting bewildered. So we're reading about that right now. Brahma was mystified about Krishna's opulence. I think we actually... It's now 58. Lord Brahma, so after Krishna, by Krishna's grace, he could see what was going on. By Krishna's power, by his yoga maya, his internal energy, by the gift of yoga maya, Brahma could see that all these different boys and calves were actually Krishna's expansions. But it was by grace, by Krishna's mercy that he could see. And then when it was causing Brahma confusion, Krishna withdrew that mercy. And what happened then? His bewilderment went away, but he wasn't confronted. He could no longer see Krishna's opulence in that way. So that's what we're going to read about now. Lord Brahma's external consciousness then revived. He came, his confusion went away, and he began to see things as he had seen them before. And he stood up. He had fallen down before. He was so overwhelmed by seeing Krishna's power that he fell down to the ground. He was stunned. He was shocked. And then when Krishna withdrew his power, took away Brahma's ability to see, he came back to his consciousness and he stood up, just like a dead man coming back to life, opening his eyes with great difficulty. He saw the universe along with himself. Here is Srila Prabhupada's purport. We actually do not die. We are at death, we are merely kept inert. What does inert mean?
Stationary.
without moving, one is inert with no movement. So we are merely kept inert for some time. When Prabhupada says that we are merely kept inert for some time, just as during sleep. Motionless, but thoughtless. Inert means on all different levels. But who is he talking about? He's not talking about this. He's not talking about the body. It has no activity. It becomes basically unconscious, like during deep sleep. That is what death is like, but not of the body. The body, why do we say that the body does not die? Why do we say that the body does not die?
It's never alive.
Yes, exactly. The body is always dead. It is the soul that gives life. This body is no more alive than the table. And as soon as the soul leaves the body, then immediately begins to disintegrate. It immediately breaks up into the earth and water and fire, etc., that it is made out of. It immediately starts to break down, decompose. Immediately. Because the life, the soul, is taken from the body. It's gone. Because the body is in death, means the body can no longer maintain life. So therefore the soul leaves, along with the subtle body, the mind, the intelligence, and false ego. Sukshma sarira, the subtle body. But then what happens to the soul during that time? The body immediately falls apart. But what happens to the soul? For some time, it remains inert. It just, with the subtle body, it remains inactive, like motionless. It does not do anything. No thinking even. No action. Because there is no qualification for it to act on the spiritual level, and it doesn't yet have a material body. So we actually do not die, Prabhupada says. At death, we are merely kept inert for some time, just as during sleep. At night we sleep, and all our activities stop. But as soon as we arise, our memory immediately returns, and we think, oh, where am I? What do I have to do? This is called susuptita nyaya. Susupta means arising from sleep. Susuptita. Suppose we die. Die means that we become inert for some time and then again begin our activities. And swabhava, or nature by association, die means that we become inert for some time and then again begin our activities. This takes place, life after life, according to our karma, or activities, and swabhava, our nature, by association. Now, in the human life, if we prepare ourselves by beginning the activity of our spiritual life, we return to our real life and attain perfection. Otherwise, according to karma, swabhava, prakriti, and so on, our varieties of life and activities continue. And so also do our birth and death. Okay, who remembers something from what I just read? Other than we do not die. Who remembers something?
We remain in a state of inertia for a while.
Yes.
So,
and then we again begin our activities. Now then Prabhupada explains what kind of activities we begin. Now, if we have developed spiritual life, if we prepare ourselves by beginning the activity of our spiritual life, we return to our real life and attain perfection. And if we don't, then according to our karma, swabhava, prakriti, the nature, Swabhava means the nature that we acquire, then we take another birth and another death and another, and then do this again and again and again and again. Because why did you take birth in the family that you took birth in? Why did you take birth in the family that you took birth in? Why did you take birth? Why did you take birth? Why did you? Everyone took birth in different families. And then according to the family, and according to the body we get, we have a certain nature, we speak one language or another language, we look one way or a different way, and we have different thoughts. We have a different way of doing things. But why did we take birth in that family? That particular family. No one knows. We're sort of just there. And suddenly we start growing, and then suddenly there we are. There we are with a particular way of dealing with the world and a particular kind of friends and this and that. But why? Why did we take birth in that situation? So what do the materialists and the scientists say? What is their idea?
Chance happening.
Huh?
Chance happening.
Well, but the life, we say it's the soul, the person, takes birth according to his karma. But they say it's just life is coming from matter. It's just the combination of chemicals make matter. But what do we say? Because we don't agree with them. What do we? How do we answer that?
We say soul transfers from one body to another.
Okay.
And then do it.
That's what we say. Okay, here are the chemicals. Then you put them together and you make life come. Because science means observable facts. And duplicatable, too. You have to be able to do it more than once for it to be accepted as truth. The idea is that anyone, if they do it, the idea in science is that if anyone does what you do in these circumstances, they should get the exact same results that you get. But they can't even do it one time. And they always say that we are very close and soon we'll be able to do it. And what do we say if we follow Prabhupada's bold example?
Check.
Yeah, he said, this is, say, okay, first I'll take all the food, and later I'll pay you. I'll give you now a post-dated blank check. Well, now no one uses any kinds of checks. I don't know what the current equivalent in credit cards is, but I'm saying, I'll give you millions of dollars. But later. So we say, at least give me 100 now. And then we'll believe something. So at least create a mosquito. And they will say that not only have we created a mosquito, but we've created a great, great jet plane that's so much bigger than a mosquito. It can carry so many other people in it. And then what do we say?
Can you create other jet planes?
No. That's the first thing, yeah. But you didn't create the pilot. You still need life to go in there. The mosquito is a plane and a pilot combined. And they say that somehow or another it came by chance. The mosquito would say, but then what's the chances of two coming? Because you need two to make more. So if only one came by chance, then it would have died out immediately. But then two have to come out. So very, very unlikely, we would say. We could say even statistically impossible. It's actually all statistically impossible. Practically speaking, it's impossible. There is one scientific fact that the probability, I can't remember the exact details of it, but that one protein molecule that's required for the body, this is just one, called collagen, and it's not even a big protein molecule, but required for the body, for it to assemble itself by chance. The figure is 1 to the 48th or something, which means, and that number, 1 to the 48th, is equal to the amount of molecules in the universe. So statistically, it's completely impossible. And then when you double that and have a second one have to come of a different gender, a male and a female, this is, or does it, and it can't, the collagen, this is just for one protein molecule called collagen, and then it doesn't, and the interesting thing also, there's collagen and none of these protein molecules that are needed for DNA, they can't reproduce themselves. So there's a whole another structure that's required to have them reproduce themselves. So it's so impossible for life to come or to be generated. So impossible. So they say no, it's possible. And we say no, it's not possible. I say, yes, it is. No, it isn't. It's not possible. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. Well, then do it. If it's so possible, you generate it. We'll give you any chemicals you want. So anyway, this takes place life after life, according to our karma, our activities in swabhava, or swabhava meaning or nature by association. So therefore, the soul carried by the subtle body and all the impressions in the subtle body, all these elements, then it takes its birth in a particular family and feels very comfortable in that family. Now in human life, if we prepare ourselves by beginning the activities of our spirit's life, if we develop the mood, the swabhava, or the nature of especially a servant of Krishna, that's what we're trying to do. To naturally, just like we naturally now like a particular type of food, we like a particular type of music, we like a particular type of dressing. But if we can naturally learn how to like Krishna and want to serve Krishna, then we will naturally, in our next birth, according to how much we've developed that natural love for Krishna and desire to serve him, if we naturally do that, then we will take our birth in an accordingly. And if we have actual love for Krishna and want to please him means serve him with great devotion, with great love, then we will take our birth in the spiritual world. And if we love him in a particular mood, like the residents of Vrindavan, then we will take a specific mood, then we will take our birth in Vrindavan. Naturally love Krishna. And then the miseries of material life are over. And if we take our birth in the material world, there's a continuous struggle to exist and to push away the miseries of life. And Maya makes us think that if we can just do this and that and this and that, and remove this problem and this enemy, then we will be happy here. But it's not possible to remove all the obstacles to our happiness. And no one in the material world can actually be happy for that reason. So it's a continuous, as Prabhupada calls it, struggle for existence. Struggling, struggling, struggling. And Maya's making us think, if I can just do this, then I'll be happy. If I can just do that, then I'll be happy. Just do that. move this out of the way and pull this closer, then I'll be happy. But it is not possible. There is so much. Because as soon as you think of a solution to this particular problem, your solution creates 5 more problems. And then you have to deal with 5 problems. And then you take up that one and you solve that problem by pushing this over here. And then you have 7 other problems. So 7 plus the 5 from before for each of those. So that's 32. And the more you struggle to make a problem-free life, the more entangled and trapped one gets in the problems that one creates. Until one is very old, and then one is just thinking, enough, I don't have enough energy to fight anymore. But on the other hand, what Prabhupada is saying, if we prepare ourselves by beginning the activity of our spiritual life, we return to our real life and attain perfection. So what is that activity that prepares us? Basically, hearing and chanting about Krishna. And we also have to hear about the very nature of the material world. We also have to hear that this is not our home. We cannot actually be at home here. We cannot actually be at home here. Because what is home? Home is the place where you can just relax and be yourself. When you're out somewhere else, you always have to you have to act in it this way, and you can't do this, and you have to act like this, and you have to smile at everyone and be polite. At home, you can just be yourself. But in the homes in the material world, there's always cockroaches and ants, and the food goes bad, and you have to pay the electric bills, and you have to pay your rent, or you have to do this. So you can never really relax and be yourself. You have to fight even at home. Struggle for existence, and then you get sick, and it's too cold, and the floor is cold. And then because the floor is cold, you have to wear slippers, shoes inside. And because you have to wear shoes inside, anyway, just one thing after the next, after the next, after the next. And you have to get the wood for the fire. And because you're cold inside, so to get the wood, you have to cut down the tree. And to cut down the tree, you have to get a saw. And you have to get a saw, you have to... This goes on and on and on. So then we think, well, I don't want to have to cut down the wood. So all I want to do is flick the switch and the light will come on and the heater will come on. But then you have to work all day long to pay the electrical bills because electricity is getting more expensive. So one can't escape. And even the water price. Do you know that in the last few years it doubled? We don't get it out here, but the water costs have doubled in the last few years. Anyway, we can talk about the material world and how entangling it is forever. But that's only one side, but we really also want to talk about Krishna. We want to hear about Krishna, because then we will develop our relationship with Krishna, and then we will want to serve him. And then we are preparing ourselves to go to him. So Prabhupada continues. As explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Mayara vase yatcha beshe katsa ha budubuvai. My dear brothers and dear sisters, why are you being washed away by the waves of Maya? What does that mean? Why are you being washed away by the waves of Maya? What does that mean?
Just we're in an ocean.
We're in an ocean. And what are we trying to do in that ocean?
Struggle.
We're trying to enjoy but we end up struggling. And the waves push us this way, the waves of our karma push us that way, and it is because we want to enjoy here. So why are you struggling? Why are you in this ocean of samsara sindhu ati dustram titiso? Why are we in this ocean that is an ocean of birth and death, and we can't see it, and we're thinking we're enjoying? So why are you struggling and fighting the waves of material existence? Washed away, you cannot fight the ocean. Instead, Prabhupada continues, once you come to the spiritual platform, and then one's activities will be permanent. Kritta Punja Punja, this stage is attained after one accumulates the results of pious activities for many, many lives. That verse, Kritta Punja Punja, is about the cowherd boys. You know that verse? Itam sutam rama sukhana bhutya dasyam gatanam paradayavatrena maya sritananam narapungavena sakyam vicharu. The cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna, they are not as if he was their friend. Sakyam vicharu krita punja punja. They have increased their piety, their spiritual wealth. To gain that position, it has taken them birth after birth after birth after birth. So much wealth to attain the position of playing with Krishna in the spiritual world. So it's a turning to Krishna and then accumulating devotion so that we've opened up our relationship with Krishna. So Kritta Punja Punja, that's this stage is attained after one accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives. Jaima Koti Sukritir Nalabhyate. The Krishna consciousness movement wants to stop Koti Janma, repeated birth and death. In one birth, one should rectify everything and come to permanent life. This is Krishna consciousness. Very simple, yes? That's how Prabhupada used to preach to us. Completed in one life. And it can be done in one moment. And just give yourself to Krishna, he says, because even the attempt is glorious. Or even hearing about it is glorious. So this is Krishna consciousness, and the Krishna consciousness movement is meant for this purpose, so that we can stop repeated birth and death. One time, when I was first began chanting Hare Krishna, I was on a subway in New York. Now, none of you have ever experienced a subway in New York, but I have. And in those days, they used to write all over the walls of outside the subway station, in the train station, under the ground. In Delhi now they have it, but in Bombay they must have it, because Delhi has it, and Calcutta has it. And Hong Kong, of course, has very sophisticated, very efficient train stations under the ground. But in any case, New Zealand, no need. But they had, on one of the walls, someone had written, because it was the 1960s, and anyway, someone wrote, abolish mandatory transmigration, reincarnation. They were protesting. So abolish, that means do away with the necessity of reincarnation. So it's actually a very good concept. And that's what Prabhupada was, that's the job of the Krishna consciousness movement. To abolish mandatory means you must do it, you don't have a choice. Reincarnation. So the only way to do that is to get out of the ocean. Nanya plavat Bhagavan Prushottamasya Lilakita Rasa Nasevanam Amkarena. That one must, the only way to do it, Nanya plavat, there is no other way other than boarding the boat of the lotus feet of Krishna by getting a taste for Krishna Katha. That's what the verse says. So Brahma, and Prabhupada, actually I couldn't find the place again in one purport. What he said, we should do this, we should get this taste for Krishna Katha. We should read the Bhagavatam and hear about Krishna, starting from the Putana Leela, which is Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. I should look for that again. So Brahma awoke from being stunned at seeing the great opulence of Krishna. And he looked in all directions. And he immediately saw in front of him Vrindavan, the land of Krishna, the spiritual world. And it was filled with trees, which were the means of livelihood for the inhabitants and which were equally pleasing in all seasons. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Jani Jivya Druma Kirnam. That's from the verse. Jana Jivya Druma Kirnam. Trees and vegetables are essential and they give happiness all year round in all seasons. That is the arrangement in Vrindavan. It is not that in one season the trees are pleasing and another season not pleasing. Rather, they are equally pleasing throughout the seasonal changes. Trees and vegetables provide the real means of livelihood recommended for everyone. Sarva kama duga mahi. Trees and vegetables, not industry, provide the real means of life. So this is a very big topic that Prabhupada spoke about many times, how artificial contemporary civilization is. It is based on industry. And actually the whole current civilization, and he would always say so-called civilization, it actually is very recent. Maybe 200 years ago, everything started shifting, and that period in history is called the Industrial Revolution. So industry, factories, and everyone had to have a 9-to-5 job, and the children, because the parents had to work, the children everyone had to go to school. So the boys were separated from their fathers at a young age, and the girls from their mothers, and the whole civilization changed at that time. Before that time, it was very much based on agriculture. So people think, naturally, that was progress. But did any of you ever work in a factory? Did you? What did your factory produce?
Cars.
And what did you do in that? Did you? Not one of the people with tightening screws and
all sort of things.
You did that kind of thing too?
No.
Now most of in the big car factories, they've produced the people. They've removed the people from doing those things, and they put robots. Just machines to do it. So just imagine before that there were people doing all the same kind of things that machines can do. So what torture that is for the mind to be in that. And that is what people call progress.
And in India,
making jeeps that don't work.
Yeah.
So this is a separate line on the floor, say from here to there.
Yeah.
Then they put the machine on the
the roller. Rail. Oh yeah, the rail.
Yeah. So when the machine is going on a time particular,
yeah,
from this line to that line,
yeah,
the person who is working on the machine should have finished that work.
And then he gets another one.
And then he gets
assembly another line.
Oh yeah.
Did you see? And one time near Melbourne, there's a city called Geelong.
Yeah.
And Geelong is famous for Ford. Ford Holden or Ford?
Footy.
Huh? Cody.
Footy.
It's one, they have Ford also, they have factories.
And Holden is in Adelaide.
I think, because that's where, yeah. So, it's the factories. And one time I was driving through there when everyone was getting out of the factories on work, from their work shift. And when you see their faces after being 8 hours in the factory, they looked like they had been tortured. Such misery was in, because the face shows what's in the mind. And there was so much misery in their mind and consciousness when they got out. It was like escaping from hell. And Prabhupada even says somewhere, factory is another name for hell. So this is the progress. But instead, no one can even think of living in a different way. But living in the countryside, it's hard work. And it's difficult for us because we're not used to that. But where are you working now?
I'm living in
office.
Yeah, so
on a computer all day long. Oh, that's another thing that will
spend the life in box.
And then, and not only that, it will in time will ruin your eyes, it will ruin your back, it will ruin your shoulders.
Yeah, can't sit properly.
Yeah. Yeah. So this modern lifestyle is so Prabhupada really wanted to create a Krishna conscious revolution so that the people would develop love for Krishna and not have to go through this Kali Yuga tortures, different forms of tortures, and making progress. So the progress is that people used to work in factories. So that was like hell. So now the progress is machines work in factories instead of people. So they're released from that hell, but now they don't have any jobs. Because the one machine can do the job of 20 people and cost less.
Even over here, to Mandu prison.
Yeah.
We went for a tour, me and my wife.
Yeah.
We're telling the history about the prison, how they got prisoners to make the prison actually.
Yeah.
They just gave them candles only.
Yeah.
A normal person, a prisoner, would work around 20 hours. And after that, the consciousness became such that they did not know anything but to use the hammer and to just keep on going through tunnels and build all this prison. And just in the candle, or everything is dark, and you just doing that 20 hours a day and keep on going.
Yeah. 20 hours a day?
20, even more, 22 hours. That's what the history they tell over there.
So, and the material world is compared to a prison. Same. And all the things that we had planned that were going to be the source of our happiness becomes the cause of our trouble and difficulty. So better to become Krishna, develop love for Krishna, and go home. Okay, we'll stop here. Did you ever read the Krishna book yet? Yes? And when you went to Vrindavan, what did you think?
I think Krishna all the time. He's so happy I can do that. I would like to stay in Vrindavan.
And when you had to leave Vrindavan, what did you think?
Oh, when I could be back again.
Did you cry?
Yes.
One time I went to one city near Shanghai called Wuxi. You know Wuxi? Could you have heard of it?
Maybe.
Definitely. It's near Shanghai, but it's very famous because they do animation, cartoon. They draw cartoons there.
Oh.
Wuxi.
No idea.
Okay, anyway.
So that'll be the next one.
You're going to Shanghai?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In Shanghai. Mm-hmm. So, when I went to Wuxi, there weren't many devotees there. Maybe 15, 17 devotees. And almost all of them were old ladies. But when I asked them, have any of you been to Vrindavan? They all raised their hands. And they started talking about Vrindavan. And how, oh, it is the most wonderful place. And oh, I just hope I can die in Vrindavan. And when I had to leave, oh, I just didn't want to leave. And I was crying and crying and crying. So, this is Prabhupada's gift, that taste, the sweet taste of Vrindavan. Why is Vrindavan so sweet? Huh? Why is Vrindavan so sweet?
Because there's so much of love for all people.
So much of love.
Because Krishna is so sweet. You can't help him.
Why is Vrindavan so sweet?
Because Krishna's love and bigger than one day.
Why is Vrindavan so sweet? Because Vrindavan is not different from Radharani. That's why it is so sweet. And it is meant for Krishna's pleasure. So when we are meant for Krishna's pleasure, and that we will be in Vrindavan immediately. If we learn how to give pleasure to Krishna, that's all. It's much better than a factory. Or sitting in it. So nowadays, people don't sit in factories, but have to sit in a cubicle. Like this, yeah, in front of a screen. And after 20 hours after a screen, looking at a screen, you're no better than the prisoners. You can't think any more than they could think. Except their backs didn't hurt as bad, and eyes didn't hurt as badly with the candle. Okay, probably the same. So where's the progress? It's just shifted. It's kind of worse.
And the big problem is the society today is encouraging that. And it will keep on. It's very hard to change the point of
view. Yeah. Very hard to change our own point of view.
Our own point of view. That's what my next question is.
Well, this is how to change it. This is exactly what we do. We chant and we hear about Krishna, we associate with devotees. And that is the effect of that is either slowly or quickly, it will change our point of view about who we are, what we want in life. And what will fill our heart, not unlimited greed, which is what's And the football teams and whatever.
Yeah.
And whatever garbage is on television that goes into people's minds with their huge televisions in their houses. I mean, as if the mind wasn't influenced. When we were growing up, televisions, I remember when we first got the first color television. It was so amazing to see colors in the television. But now, and the screens were about this big. I remember when we first went to Hong Kong, they just came with televisions, and they used to, everyone didn't have them in their house, and they just used to keep them in, some people in the stores, they would put a television, and everyone would be sitting like this, everyone would be a big crowd. And when we first went there, there were so many, there were elderly ladies from the mainland that still had bound feet. Their feet were very small. Did you see that when you were growing up too? But now you never see that. Very different.
So things are constantly changing. And whether they're devolving or evolving.
Getting better or worse.
We're not going to be able to change that. We have no influence over the way it's going. We really don't. And so we do feel ourselves pushed by the society around us, even if we're trying to take up a real spiritual life. Is there anything we can do? We just have to tolerate that, or how do we cope with that?
Well, it depends. To some degree, if you're living in this world, you'll be influenced by this world. So it has its dangers. But we should associate with devotees a lot. We should hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Satam Prasangam Mamabhiryasam Vido. This is what it means to associate with devotees. We should chant Hare Krishna, Kirtan and Japa. Sometimes we should visit holy places if we are able to. We should make our house a holy place. We should make worship in our house. And we should also try to influence others in the outside world to show them something about what's happening to them. Because that way the world that we deal with becomes a field for preaching. And use everything in Krishna's service. So if we're driving in Perth, we shouldn't use, can't use bullock carts, which would be a lot more efficient in many ways. But so we have to use the same things that the materialistic people use, but we should use them in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. So we should use everything in our life in such a way, this is theoretically ideal, to use everything that we've been put in contact with due to our fate, due to our karma. We should use it in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. Nibbanda Krishna Sambandha Yukta Varam Yujate. And whatever Krishna gives us, or whatever our fate throws in front of us, we should use that for Krishna's pleasure and not just use it for our own selfishness. We should fall in love with Krishna.
So these are some like principles that we can apply in any given situation that we're in. Even though they're not like telling you the answer or the solution to the particular situation you're in.
Well, for a particular, it's like reading them to understand what to do for the specific situation one individual is in. He has to go to someone who knows this specific situation. These are general guidelines, I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But like there are so many general guidelines in a medical book. But when you have a specific problem, you have to go to a specific doctor who will look at your case history and know who you are and see what medicine you should take and what won't, etc., and prescribe for you. So there's no lack of patience. I mean,
lack of patience.
But we all have
lack of patience.
Patience, but not patience.
Patience.
Yeah, everyone is impatient, but. Yeah, we need more doctors, so become a doctor. But you have to study and become disciplined to become a doctor. You have to be serious. It's serious work.
If not, you can become a paramedic. But you have to know your boundaries.
Or you can become what we would call a quack. Quack. It's like a duck. And they have that expression in India too, a quack. In China they have that. A doctor who's not doesn't know anything.
Yes.
There's many of them, but
they have the doctor who can give a word.
The end of a word. A
some
quack.
People call them quack.
A quack.
But he said in India when he was growing up.
Who used to say that anyway? Who called it a quack?
Mohan.
A quack.
Yeah, quack. He said when he was growing up, there were two different things. You go to the university and you practice and you get your medical certificate.
Yeah, I heard that.
And if not, you get a certificate that says you went to the medical school and you failed. Very liberal. You got a certificate. And I guess Tom read it carefully.
I told Pope on that one time. I told Pope on that. Prabhupada was a doctor, a real doctor, masterful doctor, who opened a medical school. And he wanted so many people to be trained to be doctors, because there's no lack of need.
Now you don't have to go to school, you can get a certificate on the internet.
Online. For, to become a quack or to become a.
Is it free university online?
Distance learning.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Very good. As long as you learn, you actually learn. Okay. So tomorrow night, she'll try again. We'll hear more about Vrindavan. Prabhupada will talk about in Vrindavan. Some sadhus used to feed the tigers.